The Lab takes the ethereal to the practical. Our podcast acts like a business school case study for private equity professionals, CEOs, operating partners, and chief transformational officers. We all know transformation is the key to differentiated alpha. Here's how you actually do it. Our audience tunes in to learn from those in the field, getting their fingernails dirty and driving meaningful growth through better operations, technology, and data. We learn from going to business school, teaching at business schools, and applying these lessons in the real world that case studies actually help the insight stick better. Come join us.
All right, welcome to the next episode of The Lab. We're excited to have Nadeem here today. Nadeem and I have known each other for a long time, and we both have been bitten by the bug of trying to make the world a better place in the world of M&A and private equity. So I'm excited to have you on, Nadeem.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here. Like I said, Scott, we go back a long ways, and it's been great knowing you over the years and getting an opportunity to partner with you, you know, and your firm, and watching you guys grow and innovate over the years. So thanks for having me on this stormy, snowy morning here.
Yeah, it is stormy. We've got 5 or 6 inches so far. So we'll see where we go. Just a bunch of guys with grit still getting out there and, you know, going to work and preaching the gospel here. But yeah, I think what we can do, maybe we start off is just walking through your story. I mean, I think, you know, as we alluded to, and we can be more specific, is, you know, everyone that we work with has been through, you know, if you fast forward to the end, you've built a business, you sold to private equity, it's been super successful, it's been great. The beginning of that, it can be difficult, right? You were just starting off and, you know, is it going to work? And you have this idea and you hope it's successful, and there's pluses and minuses and failures and successes. So maybe walk through how you got started, what your aha moment was, and then we'll have a little conversation. How about we ended up being quite successful in building the business? It's been fun to watch the journey, you know, with you, but I'd love to hear your version for folks.
Yeah, that'd be great. It takes me back a ways, so would love talking about it. There's so much to learn. The big question to always ask yourself is, and I find myself wondering, because every, you know, as an entrepreneur, you need a healthy amount of naivete. Like, so would I, if I know what I knew now, would I still go back and do it again? I really don't know if I would, honestly, Scott, you know, like all the ups and downs and the pain and this and that. But that's why it's so important to have that kind of naivete, is the best word I can think of. But yeah, my story is I started after trying a lot of different things. You know, I ended up in financial research and data collection. I really enjoyed it. Got recruited by a private equity firm. That private equity firm was the most prolific middle market private equity firm for 6 years. I was their internal data guy for deal sourcing and business development. And this is back from 2003 to 2008. So between 20 and 15 years ago, when the BD professional in private equity wasn't what it is now. Maybe there were 25 firms that had a dedicated BD person or team. And I wasn't the relationship guy. I was the data guy. I was doing a bunch of internal analytics, looking back, very, very basic stuff, but for that time, quite forward thinking and quite detailed. So anyway, it was a great 6 year journey for me at that private equity firm. That firm, you know, was during the financial crisis. I found myself exploring next steps in my career. I had two little kids, just had an apartment in Manhattan, got married not too long ago. And the reality of these types of situations is that my boss called me in the office. I had the best boss I could think of, someone I keep in touch with, just a great, great mentor in person. But I basically had 48 hours to clean out my desk, and that's that. It sounds bad in hindsight, but for whatever reason, I took a very healthy attitude to the party. I was like, I felt like they gave me a fair severance package and a runway to explore what I want to do. And I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur or a business owner, but as I was interviewing and exploring next steps in my career and the conversations that I was having, this is back in 2009 now, when you emailed private equity professionals and had something to offer them or just wanted to catch up, you'd actually get 1 out of 3 to respond. Now it's like 1 out of 100, you know? So just like asking questions, describing what I did, looking for a job, had that light bulb moment where I said, look, data analytics in deal sourcing in private equity is seriously lacking. And I know that what I was doing at my prior employer worked and benefited them massively when it came to deal sourcing and business development. And yeah, when I heard, you know, and then when I decided to shift strategy, look, I'm going to start this company or consulting work or just anything to get money through the door to get going, you know. And I remember, I'll give you one example. I had a conversation with a very prominent sector focused private equity firm. I was describing this concept of, look, there's a big blind spot in terms of deal flow that occurs in your target market that maybe you don't end up seeing. And I asked them, you know, what share of relevant deals do you think you see? And they said 99%. And I just paused because I knew I was at a firm that was probably the most prolific deal originator in the industry. And they were, you know, they were seeing 30 or 40%. And I had many of these conversations where just people didn't know. Their gut feeling was that they don't miss stuff. And so as I was forming the concept of the firm, collecting the data at night, just doing whatever I can to make it work, and I would hear the no's and the responses of, you know, this isn't relevant for us. We've been around for a long time. We see everything. You got to have that conviction and belief, which I very much did because I knew something they didn't. I just had to convince them or have the opportunity to show them, look, let's just try it out. Let's look at your deal data. Let's look at what closed in the market that I've been collecting now for 3 months or 6 months or whatever. And let's do it. And I remember this particular professional, this partner that said 99%, he called me a week later and he said, you intrigued me. You know, so let's try this. Let's do a 6 month analysis or a year. I can't remember what it was, $15,000 or whatever. And sure enough, you know, it was a big blind spot and they became a recurring client for many years. So
yeah, I think that's a great story. There was like the best firms on the planet, the top 10% don't see more than 50% of the deals that they otherwise could have invested in based on industry and size and scale and all the different criteria that are important. So you're right. It wasn't a one-off or two-off. It was everyone has this blind spot. So that was the neat part. I remember what you and I were to solve, and you just gotta have the conviction that the data doesn't lie. And I think, you know, as PE has become more institutionalized, it used to be relatively straightforward. You buy a company, lever it up, pay down the debt, make you great money. The problem is everyone's gone to the same business schools and figured out the weighted average cost of capital or whatever. So everyone knows how to do that. It's your insight around, let me show you why it may not be true, as opposed to the gut feel. And it's interesting that so many people had conviction that they were seeing everything they needed to see. And lo and behold, that's just not the case.
Yeah. Like the analogy I like to make is baseball statistics. I have a hunch that if you asked fans how often Babe Ruth or Mickey Mantle would hit the ball before they had statistics, let's assume that there were no statistics, they'd probably be like, oh, I don't know, 70, 80% of the time, all the time. But once you actually have the numbers, it's like, oh, if you're missing 7 out of 10, you're like, you know, you're among the best out there. And it's almost like identical stacks, you know, in private equity. And it's funny, we did a webinar last week and we did a survey of, you know, for private equity participants of what share of the market do they think they see? And the results came in like in the 20s and 30%. And I was like, okay, you know, we've been producing these statistics for over a decade, and most people are familiar with us at this point, and they've come around to this notion that, okay, we do miss it on the deals. So yeah, it's certainly evolved and changed, but the perception that was not the case. Like, you know, we've been around for a long time. We see a lot of deals. We cover the market well. And, you know, going back to the point of conviction, I had seen it work at my predecessor employer. And then like, that's the other thing, going back to the entrepreneurial journey. Yes, I heard no so many times and not interested. But if you can stick with that, and the people that you're talking to, that most of them are smart, they're thoughtful, they will eventually respect and almost absorb your conviction. They'll be like, in all honesty, I don't know what this person knows, but they believe it so much. Let's just give it a try, you know? So like that conviction permeates into them and they're like, what's the worst? Let's give it a try. And so that's really important on the conviction note that you met. And I do feel it was an essential part of those first couple of years when, you know, there's different approaches for entrepreneurs, right? For whatever reason, I had some meetings with VC funds and angel funds, but that approach didn't appeal to me. And that's a personal preference. So we did some crazy things with credit cards and equity lines. And thankfully I have a wife that's not averse to risk at all. And somehow, and then the second approach is like, my philosophy is you don't have a company until you're generating revenue. Like you don't have a business. So, and then we took that revenue, we used debt intelligently, and we slowly scaled the business. And I'm happy to say, you know, in 2023, we had our 13th consecutive year of top line revenue growth since starting the company. And it hasn't been 100% average a year, you know, so there's definitely better approaches in certain situations. There's personal preferences of the entrepreneur, but for me, having the customer and our team as the key stakeholders to focus on worked well. And I didn't want the third element to come into, just be too much for me to handle at that time. So if that meant, you know, taking a little more risk financially, if that meant having to do consulting gigs, moonlighting to get some money in the door, which I did. I did 2 6-month consulting gigs with private equity firms, unrelated to deal sourcing, more around fundraising. And that was another area of expertise that I developed, and somehow, some way made it work, and then slowly built out the team. And so there's always important to consider, you know, those types of approaches. Like you're going to be living this life for a few years. How do you want to structure it? Are you in a hurry? Do you want to, you know, is there an urgency in your market where you have to go, where speed is going to be efficient? And I looked around and I was like, there's no one having these types of conversations with private equity firms. So for all those reasons, it kind of made sense for us.
Let's talk about the market a little bit and how differentiated you guys are. I mean, I've been scrolling down the endorsements page on your website. It just keeps loading. You have so many. How many competitors are out there that are leveraging data the way you guys are? As an entrepreneur and the owner of a company, I'm imagining you're saying no one's doing it like us, but I would love to just give the listener a better understanding of what the market looks like right now and why you guys are different and winning with your BD professionals and PE.
Yeah. So I would say there's two categories of competition for SPS. The first category is anything marketing or deal sourcing related in terms of your allocation of your budget. And that could be buy side brokers or retain search firms to help you originate deals. That could be different data technology tools, services related to deal sourcing. That could be a CRM. You know, CRM is a core part of your business development arsenal. It's an essential part. And maybe you don't have the budget or resources to do two things at once. So in that general framework, SPS would compete with any marketing or business development budget location. But more specifically, like we've really carved out a niche. And thank you for reminding me of those testimonies. I think we have like 60 plus endorsements on there. Our clients don't get anything for doing that. Like we spend a lot of time on marketing and it's a very important part of the puzzle for us. But honestly, those endorsements, because at the end of the day, the private equity community, it's not that massive, right? It's like, depending on how you define it, in North America, it could be 1,000 realistic funds, could be 2,000 funds if you take out VC, if you take out real estate, so on and so forth. So a lot of firms know each other. And so for them to be able to go to that website and look at some of those endorsements, I know that these guys, or let me call these guys and have that conversation, it's been a massively beneficial. So that's how we compete in general terms. More specifically, no, like I said, we've really carved out a niche. We're not going to be the next Google or Amazon or something like that. You know, we're working with private equity firms to answer fundamental questions around the effectiveness of their deal sourcing. What market share do they see? How does that market share break out into broad versus moderate versus limited processes? Or when the advisor was boutique, are they improving at a pace that's consistent with the market, or are they lagging behind? these types of analytics, then of course, all the underlying data behind it, so they can understand which relationships would result in the highest likelihood of relevant quality deal flow for them. And then layer in tech enablement, whether it's an alerting functionality, an integration into their CRM, conference evaluation, and then offering a very high touch kind of relationship management model, because each, we're a little different from a generalist database in that each instance of the SPS portal for a client is custom built, because it houses the SPS data, but it also houses their data. So they can look at their internal analytics. So we really are differentiated. There's no one out there right now that's answering these types of questions for private equity.
Awesome. I love stories. You gave a good one early about when you were just starting out, you got your swing. Give us a more recent one about, you know, now that folks are embracing leveraging data and they're embracing, well, I'm only seeing 10 to 30% of the deal flow. Give us one in the last, I don't know, 12, 24 months where, especially in today's market, it's tough to be competitive. It's tough to see the deals. It's tough to close the deals. Is there one that jumps out to you where you're like, well, we set this PE firm up to crush it because of our engagement?
Yeah, it's a really good point. The biggest testament to the best thing for us to hear from a client is that they ended up closing deals that they otherwise would not have seen that they could attribute to SPS. And the thing with SPS is, and I'm not aware of any kind of easy button deal sourcing solution out there where you can just turn it on, the right deals suddenly come to you, and you know, you can pick and choose the ones that you want to do when they end up being home runs. So for us, it's a long-term strategic play. And rolling into this year, about half of our client book was on multi-year contracts. And it's a long-term play. It's not going to happen overnight. It's a strategic, analytical, data-driven partnership. And there's also a commitment on our part to continue to innovate, listen to our clients, understand where deal sourcing may be going, technology may be going, and then working with them to continue to cater and innovate on our product. And that's one of the benefits when you're niche, that you can really hone in on what your clients need and sometimes anticipate their needs in their ways that they hadn't even thought of. And they're like, oh, wow, this is incredible. And so you asked me for specific stories. We also have a couple of more detailed case studies that we put together recently on our website. One of those case studies points to two or three deals that they ended up closing from our service that they can pinpoint for a relationship that was formed several years ago. And I can't stress enough the power of those relationships. Endorsements aside, you know, 5-6 years ago, I've been at different conferences and events where, you know, you have an audience where you're trying to attract prospects and shake hands with clients. And there's nothing like a client bringing you over into their circle, literally into their circle, when they're talking people that, you know, some are your prospects, one are your clients, some you don't know. And they're like, you know, do you guys know Nadeem and do you guys know SPS? Have you used them? We closed a deal last year, you know, from their system. So this is the stuff that really, because ultimately, yeah, first you got to, you know, when we say that you're missing 70, 80% or whatever it turns out to be of your market, you're showing them the reality of an issue. But then the next step is actually helping them address that and fill gaps. And the ultimate reward of that is having them close deals and ultimately exit those deals that are going to, you know, perform really well and generate great returns. So,
yeah, I think one of the things that we've enjoyed working with you on is a lot of the PE firms that we work with have said, now I'm seeing more deal flow, not just more deal flow, but more relevant deal flow within our parameters. How do we get an angle? It's one thing to see the deal. It's another thing to either appreciate that the seemingly, you know, irresponsible purchase price multiple that's required to win an auction actually may not be that irresponsible if we can do A, B, and C. And how do we find, in our example, you know, executives that can help you see around corners a little better? So it's a intended consequence, I guess, is being thoughtful about more deals and more angles. So I'd be curious, where do you see the future? I mean, you've sort of helped over the last, you know, a couple decades here using data to drive better insights. Where do you see this going? I mean, there's still a lot of runway if you're not seeing 70 to 80% of deals you could, fine. But what's the next step for deal flow and private equity firms to continue to be able to add value, which they should be doing, add value to their portfolio company?
Yeah. So Scott, not ever disregarding the importance of relationship building in our business, like it is a relationship driven business. And that's very important. Those soft skills, that long-term view, that non-transactional approach in business development and deal sourcing is so, so critical and so important. What I'm about to say doesn't take anything away from that whatsoever, but private equity also is not like the early adopters of technology and innovation. They tend not to be in the space. But I think they can rely on service providers like SPS and others to stay on top of different technology and innovation and then offer it to them. So what am I focused on right now? And where do I see things going? It's a little bit of a blurry picture, but I think AI is going to play a big part in deal sourcing. And like I said, I don't know what the answers are. We're looking at it from two angles right now. It's to improve the quality, continually improve the quality and the efficiency in the collection of our data. And if we can broaden its reach using AI, and then also how can we, on the other side, improve the user experience? And a data offering such as ours with mostly structured data, not all structured data, but mostly structured data with definable, comprehensible data points. You know, we're talking about 10,000 deals a year that we track, 1,500 different intermediaries that have been active in the last few years, about 2,000 private equity funds, their portfolio companies, 20, 25,000 people that have been active in the M&A space. So a service such as ours is well suited for AI augmentation, in that we've got all this information, the ability to analyze that information, customize it in a way that can, you know, that's 100 times faster than we can do today. And so I can try all these different approaches and cuts of data and analyze, which right now it's still there, but it might take me a while, or they might have to reach out to the SPS team to run some cuts. If they can just type in a couple of prompts or use voice commands to analyze this data, and ultimately they're using it in more robust ways because it's so quick to process that. Like, that's the vision that I have in my mind. We're still in the early stages. AI, as a CEO of not a massive company, but recognizes that AI is going to be important for a lot of reasons. I compare it to the wildcat days of oil and gas, where there's no playbook, right? You got to go there, you make mistakes, you learn, you try it out, and the first one that figures it out, you know, strikes gold or whatever. It's the same here. You know, you got to educate yourself, go to newsletters, try different things, try different tools, and figure out how it applies to your business. And certainly we're in the early phases of that. But if you ask me what direction it's going, I think like entrepreneurs and leaders of organizations of all sizes are asking themselves, you know, how can I help AI? How can AI help in my business? And then how can it help my customer?
Yeah, it's the biggest question we get all the time, right? How is AI going to help for finding better angles, finding better talent, finding, you know, better, making better decisions during that ownership period? So listen, I think you're right. And it's nice that you've been, you know, at the forefront of trying to change private equity and deal flow. And it's just nice to have you on and talk about it. So listen, there's, you know, more to come, but we appreciate you doing that with us. And hopefully the audience finds it compelling as well. I know we certainly did.
No, thank you, Scott, and tons of respect and props for what you're doing over at Landcore. Innovation takes a lot of forms, and it took you, just like it took me a while to explain what I'm doing to private equity firms and like why it exists and why it's important. I mean, you literally had to explain it to me several times, you know, because it was a new and novel way of looking at things. And so, and finding a unique way to use our data to help facilitate that. So congratulations to you and your innovation and to Landcore, and look forward to continuing the partnership. Thank you so much for having me.
No, we've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Hope you guys enjoyed that. I always like talking to your friend, Scott. Yeah, I kind of feel like one of those people that just get invited to a sleepover because I'm just friends with you. And you know, I'm talking to you. You guys are talking about childhood stories over here. But all jokes aside, Nadeem has clearly grown a great business. Super valuable. First of all, tell us a little bit more about how you use them, because that sounds pretty unique. And then I'd love to talk about their exit, which we didn't get a chance to on the way out.
Yeah, well, then one of the things that I've liked about him is he's a data-driven guy, right? So many of us in private equity firms and everyone fit and have a perception of reality, and usually it's pretty spot on, but there are blind spots, as he referenced. And so the data integrity is always important. You know, Bain Consulting, you know, smart folks that are trusted by a lot of, you know, very profitable and successful PE firms, they made a strategic investment in them because they wanted the data. So the data there is good. And what we do with them is we say, all right, well, if PE firms are asking us on the one hand to help them find better management teams, fine. The whole business of Landcore though is how do we flip it and say, what do you want to buy 2, 3, 4 months, let alone 1 or 2 years before it comes to market? And so we're using all this data to determine what are interesting opportunities out there? How do we take those opportunities and attach 1 or 2 really seasoned executives who were either ran that exact business or ran one of their exact competitors to help people see around corners? So we use the data to attach real people who can say, listen, I used to run this business. I'm not conflicted because now I'm doing X, but man, I wish I knew then what I know now, because what I know now is this. And applying that to a new investment opportunity is super valuable, because just because the numbers in a model say that the business is going to do well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. It's nice to have operational insight. And that's how we use the data with Nadeem and his team.
Yeah, look, I mean, I can't watch an NFL game without data analytics from AWS getting flashed all over the place. If it's getting forced down our throat when we're sitting around on a Sunday, you better be using it when you're doing critical thinking and deal sourcing in the private equity space, especially when tools like this exist. So a little different episode than some of the past. I really liked it. I hope you guys did too. Again, one of the biggest things that I liked about Nadeem is he's been an operator. He served PE and now he's partnered with Bain & Company, and you know, the sky's the limit for SBS. So we'll be back next week or shortly thereafter with another episode.
Thanks.